Before we get started, we wanted to give a shout out to Unbiased Media Productions for letting us use their space to record this episode. They've been tremendous in helping us put the show together. Hi, I'm James Olson.
And I'm Jaden Fraze.
Welcome to Pacific Sound Radio. We're located in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And we started this podcast in order to provide a platform for local artists to share their stories and showcase their unique personalities, with the goal to foster and grow local support for the Vancouver music scene.
Exactly. Pacific Sound Radio is a podcast dedicated to shining the spotlight on a variety of talented and unique local bands and artists. Speaking of which, of course, we actually met through a local band opposite Shore.
Yeah, I played bass guitar.
And I played electric guitar, and both being fans of local music, well, we actually came from some slightly different backgrounds.
Precisely. I come from a music journalism background. I wrote for Discorder magazine throughout college, and I'm still an active contributor to Beatroot magazine.
And for myself, I took the more technical approach, as I'm now working in the audio field alongside some different local artists and bands, producing and recording here in the city. And when it comes to local acts, we've got some amazing folks in the studio, Wind Up Birds. James, why don't you tell us a little bit about them?
Definitely. Wind Up Birds are an indie rock unit that brings a breezy blend of jazz, rock, and pop that is both familiar and refreshing. We had the chance to catch up with vocalist and guitarist Sam Willett, guitarist and vocalist Matthew Okuda, and drummer Atlee King to chat with them about their recently released debut record, their distinctively do-it-yourself mindset to art and music, and their place in a thriving underground community of young bands.
And without further ado,
welcome to our first episode.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Columbia.
You're listening to
Pacific Sound Radio.
Okay, awesome. So I guess we'll kind of start off with some history here. So my co-host Jaden and I come from a unique position where we got to see Sam's previous band, Alfield Recordings, evolve essentially into Wind Up Birds. So how would you describe Alfield Recordings as a band, and what was that process of transition like to Wind Up Birds?
Yeah, I don't know. We were just a bunch of friends who met at university. We kind of had this sort of like, you know, mishmash kind of Velvet Underground vibe. We all were doing different things. It was very noisy. We weren't particularly good, but it was a lot of fun. I think I came up with a song that was kind of a little more poppy, a little more accessible. And Gavin, who was the drummer in Alfield Recordings and who was the drummer for a long time in Wind Up Birds, really liked it. And he was like, let's do something with it. And we got a show offer for Alfield Recordings, and I don't think we could make it, but Gavin and I could make it, so we decided we'd get a band together. So we got Matt, and we got Santiago, who unfortunately can't be here today, though he's in our hearts.
Always.
Forever and always. Yeah, and we got together, we played the show, and it went really well. We liked the style, we were all sort of on the same page, and
and then how did Wind Up Birds come to be? Because we played when Jaden and I were in Opposite Shore, we played a few shows with Alfield Recordings, and then I remember, I think it was our second or third show, we saw Wind Up Birds for the first time, and I'm not sure if that was your
That was Olympia Pizza?
Yes.
That was our second show.
There we go. Yeah, that was our second show. Yeah. Our first show was at Fingers Crossed. We played with Frogpile, Moon Museum, and Kilo.
I remember that. Yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it was just sort of like one band was kind of ending and another band was sort of starting. I mean, I think Gavin and I both wanted to keep playing music.
Kept the bird theme, though. Both bird themes.
Yeah, bird theme carried along from, you know, one band to the other. Yeah, that was about it. It was just like, hey, you know, people are willing to let us play at their shows. We better have a band so that we can say yes. That was about it.
And was there kind of a deliberate decision, hey, it's a new project, we should be writing different material? You deliberately dropped the name, and obviously you weren't working with the same players anymore.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I think we tried some experimental stuff. We did some Daniel Johnston covers. We did a Tom Waits cover. We did some more, you know, out there kind of stuff. And I mean, well, I guess we wanted to try the other side. We wanted to, you know, let's try writing pop songs. Let's try being a little bit more accessible and see if it makes us maybe more listenable.
Yeah, definitely. What was the process kind of like? Going from, you know, two different kind of style of songs, was the writing process a little bit different? Or was it, do you guys kind of have a go-to, hey, you know, one guy brings some lyrics or a tune, and then the rest of you guys kind of fill it out? Or what's kind of the process behind that?
So generally what happens is Sam will put together a little demo and send it to us maybe a couple days before practice. And then we show up at practice and we all sort of bring our own flavor to it. But Sam does most of the songwriting. I've written a couple songs.
Lately, though, actually, yeah, we're trying to move away from that. Santiago has brought in a song or two. Matt's brought in some really good songs. We're trying to expand from just me.
But yeah, generally, like, one person brings in a song and then it is built upon.
So in that case, it's usually just like kind of a bare bones idea and that's built from there and fleshed out.
Yeah, mostly chords and melody and maybe an idea of like a groove or a kind of style or else, you know, I want to do a song that sounds like some like Steely Dan, or I want to do a Mac DeMarco-y kind of jangly song, or, you know, and sometimes that's the way that
two options.
Yeah, there we go.
Steely Dan or Mac DeMarco, or like...
and sometimes it works out that way, and sometimes it goes in a different direction, but it's in the end it's a group effort.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot. From what I've heard of you guys, there's a lot going on in terms of different influences, but it sounds cohesive. So I can tell that there's kind of some different stuff going on. You know, a big one that I hear, obviously, is Mac DeMarco. And I did talk to Sam about this a few months ago when I was interviewing him for Beatroot. But, you know, you guys are kind of described as, like, dad rock, and I wanted to get your perspective on, you know, what would you say is the difference between dad rock and classic rock, and why would you think, like, what makes you think that, like, dad rock is more cool now than, obviously, like, classic rock?
Well, yeah, I want to hear what Matt's going to say. Yeah. So you say your bit, I'll say my bit, and then we'll fight it out.
Okay. So, I mean, to me, the distinction between dad rock and classic rock is classic rock is what I thought was cool when I was in middle school, and dad rock is what I thought wasn't cool in middle school.
But now
it has reversed. Well, I don't think it's cool. I just like it more, you know? I mean, what is cool? That's kind of a out there concept. Now, your two cents.
Yeah, my two cents would just be, I mean, I think, I'll say it this way, dad rock is classic rock, you know?
Yeah.
Most dad rock is classic rock. I don't think all classic rock is dad rock.
Yeah.
What I'd call dad rock is like, it's classic rock music. It's usually sort of 70s, you know, maybe early 80s kind of rock and pop. A little smoother, a bit of a jazz influence kind of thing, maybe some nice synths. I mean, I think of Steely Dan, I think of, you know, Don Henley, Loggins and Messina, stuff like that. I mean, sometimes there's a bit of a funk influence. I think a lot of young artists now have, you know, come back to, you know, those older artists and said, you know, this stuff's really cool. And maybe it's a bit of a contradiction there, because I think your instinct would be that stuff isn't cool. Like, you
I
know,
think that's kind of why it is sort of co-opted.
It's cool. You know, we're gonna go against the grain by listening to, you know, Billy Joel and, you know, Donald Fagen and stuff like that, rather than, you know, listening to Joy Division or The Clash or, you know, more, you know, go-to indie rock artists.
So where do you guys think that's gonna evolve then for kind of, you know, the full kind of dad rock scene? Because, you know, you see all these different artists kind of doing one thing at one time and then moving on to something new and different.
The next thing is mom rock, for sure.
Mom rock, nice.
And then we're going to get into Tori Amos, Uncle Rock.
Sheryl Crow, Fiona Apple, Ani DiFranco. Oh,
Fleetwood Mac, for sure, yeah.
I actually call Fleetwood Mac dad rock.
Well, maybe it's like both parent.
Yeah. You're right.
And then you get aunt and uncle rock, mom which rock is like uncle rock, you get like, I mean, some like Brian Eno in there, and it's a little more out
Wilco,
there.
Uncle Rock.
Oh,
Wilco.
Yeah.
Wilco is sometimes dad rock too, isn't it?
Wilco's for the whole family. for sure.
One of the most accessible bands by far.
In terms of like where we're going from here, I think there's definitely a palpable influence currently in at least the local scene. Everybody's kind of on the same wavelength there. I'm not sure where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. I hope it's nice. I hope I get to be there.
Kind of touching on that, I mean, browsing through your Facebook and looking at your merch, there's also kind of tied in with Dad Rock. I see a bit of a vaporwave influence and affinity for the retro. Want to see if there's a connection there, deliberate or otherwise, to what you guys are doing musically.
Vaporwave.
I think...
What a time.
Oh, I think there's a lot of overlap in terms of just sort of musical style. I mean, vaporwave is, again, lots of sort of smooth synths, a little bit of a jazz influence, kind of funky. I think we just sort of intuitively put those two together.
I think it... I mean, I hate to be the first one in this podcast to say the word, but it comes down to aesthetics.
Yeah, there we go.
In terms of our own personal lives and also in what we try to present as the band image, there's a... Yeah, can we have a running aesthetics counter? No, but...
A little sound effect every
time. I think that it's certainly that kind of that is present in our own.
I think
lives.
Dad Rock and Vaporwave share some aesthetics.
Yeah,
too.
Certainly. I mean, you can take any Dad Rock song, Dad Rock song, slow it down, put it through a phaser, and then maybe layer another drum track underneath, and it's Vaporwave.
That's really what makes Vaporwave not even about music.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Vaporwave is a type of music, but like...
It's anti-music.
Every, like, the most popular Vaporwave songs are just songs slowed down.
Yeah.
I mean, even people that have made hits that have gone on the radio that are remixes, like, they at least do something to it. But Vaporwave comes from a completely non-musical place at its origin, you know? And I think that's where, I mean, if you think about where things are headed, that's still where we're at. I mean,
maybe Dad Rock is going to become more like Vaporwave, and it'll become just like super, you know, minimal. You'll repackage, you know, Billy Joel's You May Be Crazy.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah. I mean, you
10
go,
tracks, that's your whole album.
You go to the root of whatever, and I hate to even like dance around the word aesthetic, but where Mac DeMarco, Vaporwave, those types of things are coming from, and all the people playing music in 333. You go to the root of where that is, and it's I think the most accurate way to describe it is the nostalgia for something that they never had. A summer that they never lived. The summer of whatever, 69, 70, 72.
Probably like
whatever
78.
Summer, yeah, 70,
yeah.
Whatever summer,
yeah,
they grew
that,
up listening to their parents talk about and hearing their parents talk about, oh, this is what we were listening to back then.
I think another
thing, it wasn't cool back then, like Matt said. But.
Yeah, well, another big part of sort of what you're talking about there is that... And this is a sweeping generalization, but it seems to me that a lot of the people in the bands playing in sort of in the venues that we go to and the people attending these shows, it's a lot of people that sort of, this is certainly true for me, but like maybe didn't really fit in that much in like, you know, high school, or like didn't really have a
I think it's
concrete
fit into not fitting in.
Yeah, exactly. It has become a kind of cool to be kind of outside of cool. And it's sort of this oscillating thing between what is cool and what is not, and what is hip, and it's this whole mess of... But I think that certainly factors
in. Well, I think that's the rolled jeans and the weird,
you know,
ugly clothes. You're wearing sort of frumpy, unattractive clothes, and I think that, again, that fits in, you know?
I mean, two years ago, if you showed me an outfit that I wear on a daily basis, I would have been like, what is happening?
Like even the tucked-in pants?
Oh, man. I remember when tucked-in pants, like, that was, like, not even two years ago.
To be fair, though,
year
I had, like, a smooth
ago.
Transition
no,
to tucked-in pants because I used to
wear
sweaters.
Well, you start tucking
in
the front and the side, like the hockey players.
No, you tuck the whole thing. I tuck the whole
well,
thing.
Well, I mean, you can do that.
I was ahead of my time. That's okay.
You can tuck in however much you want. It's like you're rolling up your pants. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, the rolling... How far before they're shorts? That's the big question. Where's the line?
I think that's the future of Dad Rock. It's just going to be, the music's the same, nothing changes.
You get the
people
white
just
Nike
keep,
sneakers.
They keep
until
increasingly, you know, rolling
their
pants
further,
up more and more.
Until you're just wearing like a ring of denim around your waist.
Just the belt loop.
Yeah, but it's very thick. It's like a hula hoop.
Very thick.
And then colorful boxers come back in.
Yeah, and it's sort of, it's like a halo of denim around a colorful boxer. Kind of thing.
That's where things are headed.
So that's denim hula skirts.
Yeah.
Not denim skirts.
You can cut all that up. Just take like
no,
25 seconds
all of it
at the start.
The shape of jeans to come.
Have you guys thought of that as the merch idea? The Wind Up Bird.
Oh, the Wind Up Bird.
Coolest.
No,
we put them into production, but we're not going to tell anybody. We don't want to tell too many people yet.
We're actually wearing them now. We're all never nude.
we're gonna introduce them to the market when the time is ripe.
But sure. We talked about hats.
We have talked about hats.
Well, I'll tell you later.
I've spent much time in my life discussing hats.
Yeah, unfortunately, I personally can't pull off hats. I've tried. Atlee can attest to that. But we like the idea of getting like a little baseball cap. Again, we're sort of falling into that that cliched aesthetic. But
we're now talking about branded hats, not just hats. Like, we're not just going to sell hats.
Yeah,
we have our name on them.
Just plain black hats, nothing on it. Yeah,
yeah, it's like, hey, buy our hats. They're just hats.
Got them wholesale.
Keep the rain off your head. They're your hats now. They're not
so on your own patch. Could be some other band.
There you go. You know, we just want to be a platform for you to create upon.
Another question for you guys. What, you know, how long did it take for you guys to develop the Dad Rock image? Or was it just like, just kind of turned into a thing? Or, I mean, with James and I, like, being in Opposite Shore, you know, we deliberated over a ton of stuff for weeks and weeks, and it was kind of a tedious process until we kind of started, further developing a full, like, band name and everything like that. So kind of wanted to hear your guys' story on, you know, how that came to be.
I mean, it must have been acknowledged and more than decided.
I don't know. I think we just sort of like it was. We played music that was kind of like that. And I don't think it was like, oh, we came up with this. I think it was more like we saw other people doing it and we liked it. You know, saw other bands out there that were doing, you know, sort of the same thing, and we thought, hey, man, I want to be like those guys. So I don't think it was more imitation than any sort of, you know, impressive creative process.
And due to the sort of, I don't want to say rush, but like the necessity of like the, because we were put together in such a short period of time as a fill in for an Owls or Outfield production or
Outfield recording.
Yeah, Outfield or so
far.
Outfield recordings gig. We didn't have really time to come up with things like a name. Like, we decided the name first day. We wrote like our entire set list the first day. We still play some of those songs.
Yeah, we still play Earl, we still play Sherman, and I think for a long time we used to play that jazz one, Rockin' My Soul.
Oh, Rockin' My Soul. Yeah, so like that was three tunes that we wrote on the first day of being a band that we carried through for almost more than a year. I mean, even with Earl, like, we're still playing Earl.
Yeah,
Earl's on your new record.
Yeah, it is. So is Sherman.
Same with Sherman.
So that's a bit of a neat thing there. But yeah, just because it was so quick, it was just so like into it, there was no time for making decisions, and as a result, everything kind of fell into place.
Mm-hmm.
Just gave Sam a Facebook page and saw what would happen. And
pants got cuffed, guitars became slightly out of tune.
And the rest is history.
Shirts got tucked in. Chorus fell.
Again, nothing original, all borrowed from other people.
Much
so.
Like Vaporwave.
I think it was more like we went on Facebook and we were like, this looks cool.
Yeah, basically.
So we've been talking about obviously your sound, but let's hear a song.
Oh yikes!
Yeah, okay, transition Charles? To some other stuff.
Charles.
No, not Charles. Sorry.
Should I start with Earl?
No. The oh. House.
House. Sorry, the Gordon.
Gordon's house. Yeah. The names. Yeah. They're all names. All our songs are names.
Yeah. Courtesy of
me, Matt, I guess.
Matt Okula.
Yeah.
The Okula
Bear. So there's a house in Poco. It just says the word Gordon on the side of it. It's not explained. There's no rationale behind that. It just says Gordon. And so, yeah, we wrote a song. That's the whole story. I'm sorry. I don't have anything interesting.
It's called Gordon's House?
Gordon's House.
Gordon's House.
Take you home to Gordon's house. Let me take you home. Button up your blouse. Reading books from back to front. Don't mean to be so blunt, but I must speak frankly. There's no need to thank me. On the roof of the mall, tell the truth, don't tell it all.
on the roof of the mall. Tell the truth, don't tell it all. On the roof of the mall. Tell the truth.
Awesome.
That's nice.
That one's called Gordon's House. Yeah. Another song on your record called Charles Grocery, which is named after an actual store.
It is.
What inspires you guys lyrically? Because, you know, there's a lot of romantic, nostalgic, pining feel to a lot of your songs.
Well, Charles Grocery specifically seems like a really sad building.
It does.
Like, we were driving by on our way to a gig, and we saw Charles Grocery. I don't know if you're familiar with it or if you've been there. But it's this boarded up grocery that looks like nobody's been in it for about like 100 years. And it was just, I think it was actually, that was a name that we tacked onto an existing song.
What did we call that before? It was called Charles Grocery.
Oh, it was something weird.
Oh, Next Door to Paradise.
I don't remember that at all.
We pulled it off an old Hawaiian pop.
Oh, that was Don Ho.
Yeah.
Ah, aloha from Don Ho. Yeah, no.
We found that record, and I don't think we ever listened to it. We just liked the cover. he had this sort of like R&B band, and they were all dressed really nicely, and they all had like really nice, you know, 60s instruments, and I had the record in my basement, and we were practicing the song. We thought, well, what's the title? And we turned the record. I think we just pulled it right off. We didn't even take a lyric. It was like, that was the song title on the record, and we took it.
Don Ho was the answer to a crossword puzzle I was doing recently.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, so there's crazy. A little connect
Tiny there. Bubbles, that was his big hit.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, a lot of our songs are names, like Sherman and Walter and Charles Grocery and Gordon's House and Earl.
I think it's nice and easy to write when you've got a name and a character kind of thing. You sort of, hey, here's a guy, you know, here's a situation. Unfortunately, we gotta write more songs with women's names now, because we've done way too many guys' names.
That's true. We gotta mix it up a little bit.
But yeah, we sort of like come up with a character. It's like, what does this guy do? What is he like? What's he like, kind of thing? And, you know, you'd write some sort of like sad, jangly song about him.
What does Earl like? Tell me a little bit about Earl.
Earl?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, he's pretty misunderstood. Rarely does the
rarely
things
does the things he should. Yeah. Okay.
And most of the songs you mentioned, they're all on your new record, right?
Yes. Yeah. Casual Music album in stores now.
That lovely Matokuda tune is not. It will be on our
I missed the cutoff.
Next record. But oh, okay. Yeah, we'll probably most of the songs we'll play will probably be from the record.
Nice. You know, with Casual Music album that came out in March, what's the response been like from fans, other bands?
We've only received one negative piece of
we got a negative?
Not about the album, really? Just about us. It was a personal attack.
Oh, I remember that.
I kind of want to mention this. This was we were so taken by it that
we won't
actually
mention any names.
No, we won't give any
names. Please don't mention names.
We won't.
Ex-lover.
We were so taken by this piece of criticism that we decided to set it as our Instagram bio for like
wear it on your sleeve,
like a month. I'll see if I can remember it word for word. Wind up birds are Vancouver's shittiest. No, how was it?
Oh, there was a line about
wannabe
shitty,
like,
high school age kids who want to be big rock stars.
It was cutting.
I want to be a big rock star.
I want to be a big rock star too. I want to be a shitty big rock star.
But anyway, the general album response has been, I mean, pretty good. We've gotten a number of reviews from a number of different publications, and they've all said basically the same thing, which is that this is a nice record, which is what we were kind of going for. We wanted it to be nice. Good and nice.
I think we were just sort of thrilled that we got to make a record.
Yeah.
I've never made a record before.
I'm happy with how it sounds, which is...
Yeah, I think that was the big thing. We weren't necessarily worried about what people would think. We just wanted it to be good. We wanted it to sound like we wanted it to sound, and we were pleased with that. So anything beyond that is gravy. It's extra.
Yeah. For sure. And what was the writing recording process like for the album? You recorded it all at your house, right, Sam?
Casual Music Studio.
Yeah, we...
It's Sam's house. Yeah, it's not a real studio.
Oh, it's Casual Music Studio now.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I tried to get Snapchat to do like a geotag like filter, but they turned it down almost immediately.
Yeah, we didn't really write or rehearse. We just had the songs. We've been playing them for about a year. And our good friend Liam Carlin of the band Kai Bravewood, and Tyler Norris of the band Kai Bravewood, and Jonathan Antepian
Ruckenstein.
There we go. Formerly of Oki, they came over. I mean, it was sort of like
who has microphones? Who do we know that has microphones?
Let's pull some gear. We did it in the living room, kind of thing.
It was an intense. It was like 2 weeks.
It was much longer than that. It probably
In total, like recording time.
Oh yeah, we probably didn't spend any more than 7 or 8 days. Okay. Recording.
Yeah, but it was spread out over most of the late summer.
Yeah, like end of August till about October.
So like October fall, I guess that's
yeah, really something like anymore. That. But yeah, it was fun. I mean, we didn't. We barely spent any money on it. I think we bought an 8-input interface. And then we just borrowed cables and mics and gear from friends and stuff.
We made a pop filter out of a sock.
Yeah, that was cool.
And we built a vocal booth out of old baffles from an elementary school.
Yeah, from an elementary school music room.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, I think the whole DIY aspect of it is just fun. You know,
well, I mean, we had time to sort of do what we wanted. I mean, I think the first day we recorded drums, and then John said, "Well, I think I could probably plug another mic in and get like 7 or 8, you know, inputs or whatever." And we went, "Okay, yeah, sure." And so the second day we did all the drums again, and I mean, there was no real pressure. We weren't like, "Oh, we're paying for this time or anything."
We had a mic in the chimney.
Yeah, we put a mic in the fireplace. We tried some really weird stuff. I mean, some of it worked really well and we used it, some of it didn't, but
we did not end up using the chimney track.
No. Yeah, what was the weirdest process going through all that?
The weirdest thing we did?
We went to Henderson Place, which is a mall out in Coquitlam. And they have those, you know, those like toy vending machines where you give it a toonie and it spits out like a little bubble with a toy in it. They have these bootleg Lego ones.
Yeah.
And so we went and we got a bunch of those and we set them up on we taped them to the kick drum. I think it really comes through on the record.
Yeah. I think they were asking about like recording.
No. It's all about
production, the weirdness.
And one of them was like a blue Deadpool with guns.
Yeah. Is that what we got
instead of swords?
Oh yeah, is that the most prominent?
Yeah. All these superheroes were like kind of off. They were like recognizably a superhero, but something was wrong about them. Like we got She-Hulk, but she had guns.
Oh, right, it was She-Hulk. It wasn't Deadpool. Guns. It was Blue Spider-Man had guns.
Blue Spider-Man also had guns.
But in terms of like weird recording stuff, we found a Sanyo, like a Japanese electronics company that made like portable tape recorders and boomboxes and stuff. And we found this boombox. I think it was for recording answering machine messages, and it had this like portable mic, looked kind of like the trucker mics you have on like a ham radio. And it was really cool because it got us this really like tinny lo-fi sound, and we used that for the vocals on Live from the Other Room. Mm-hmm. That's how we got that sort of like really close sound.
We sent the tracks to Liam Carlin, who mixed it for us, and he was like, "What the hell did you guys do on this track? This is terrible." well, not like terrible the sounding, but like terrible to work with because it's just this horribly compressed. It's
I think we also used that mic. We ran it through a whole bunch of effects pedals, and
we were
sort of goofing around with it, joking, pretending we were sort of like radio announcers.
On the last track of the album, Sherman, you can hear in the background Sam kind of pretending to be a radio DJ.
I think I just rewatched Reservoir Dogs, and so I was doing a bit of the deadpan radio announcer. From the radio station.
Super Sounds of the 70s.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that was neat. We've actually gotten a lot of compliments on the vocal for Life in the Other Room. So maybe the next album we'll just do all the instruments through that mic and see how that turns out.
But we recorded a track recently for a compilation of like Vancouver bands that's, I think, coming out in July sometime.
Right.
And I think we used the mic on that too. We sort of
did we?
Yeah, we tried the verse a few times.
Oh yeah, we did all sorts of things.
Didn't really work, and so we went to the mic. So that might be our go to sort of like inspiration. Like, let's try it out. See, who knows? It might be a good fit.
And in regards to like, you know, all the things that you guys did in terms of the recording process, was it a purely artistic decision, or was it more just, hey, we don't really have money to go into a studio right now, so we got to do it ourselves? Well, or is it a bit of both?
I think it was just laziness.
No, I don't think it was laziness.
I think it was why get the money together when we're not going to like have sounds as much as
it. Yeah, true. We wanted more control. And I think we were willing to sacrifice the pristine, crystal clear studio quality for being able to make what we wanted to make with the people we wanted to make it with.
We'd also recorded those songs a few times earlier. We tried recording them in our house before live from the floor. We went into a studio.
We did do a couple tracks in the studio. We
went to a friend's home studio and tried that stuff live. Most of the time we did stuff live, and so we decided, let's give it a shot track by track and see if
break it down better. And take a step back and see how it works.
Yeah, so I think it was nice because we tried the songs before, and we had a really good idea. We'd sort of trial and error figured out what... we figured out what we didn't want the tracks to sound like. And then sort of went from there.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. I think that's how we're going to do our second record as well. Same casual music studio.
That's awesome. So, I mean, you guys, speaking of live stuff, you guys have some pretty cool gear on the live front, too.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I see you, it's that guitar that just looks...
Yes.
I can't even remember what it's called.
I have a guitar. I bought it from... So, the only information that's known about it is that it's called an Astrotone. It's from like the 60s, Japan. I think it was a very cheap guitar when it was produced, but it's quite nice. The main thing is that nobody has any information about anything relating, and it has no serial number or no other text on it whatsoever.
Just absolutely one of a kind.
Well, we've tried carbon dating. That didn't do much for us. All I know is that it's not a Tiesco. That was my original thought, but it's not. So we're not sure. The intonation's a little out, but I love it. And
you got it from another Vancouver musician.
I did. I got that one from James Armstrong because he,
James Armstrong of what's his band? What's his band called? I can't remember. I'm blanking now.
I'm totally. And I feel terrible.
Get happy. Right. There you go. Formerly of Royal Oak. Get happy.
But actually, the original Craigslist ad for this guitar was so noteworthy that people were talking about it on guitar forums because basically the original seller of this guitar had just all caps. Super surf style Japanese 60s surf vintage surf style guitar vintage Japanese surf style guitar, all caps like 100 times. And
was that Chalowski? Was that his ad?
I don't know who it was originally. Okay. But then James bought it from him, and I bought it from James, and it was a whole mess. And anyway, it's a ridiculous guitar, and I love it. And it's also very small.
Have you guys thought of, you know, bringing anything from the recording process that you've used that's kind of different to the live setting?
I think it'd be neat to take a little mic live and see what we can do with that.
I don't know how that mic would work live. It would either, like, break or it would just distort.
I think it'd be neat. Feedback. I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
It wouldn't feedback because I think it'd be interesting.
It would, you know, it'd be nice to have sort of a tinier mic for that sort of lo-fi vocal sound. Yeah.
Especially on live. We should try it out in practice sometime. We should do that.
That would be interesting. Let's give it a shot.
We'll get back to it on that one.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
You also need to come up with a name for it. I mean, you invented it. So.
Oh, the
casual music mic?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's our go-to. Okay, casual music album, casual music studio.
Casual something.
We're
just filthy casual.
Yeah. if we ever started a venue, it'd be...
Stop.
Casual music venue. The nice thing about... CMA is it's also Country Music Awards.
It's true, yeah. I didn't pick up on that.
We're completely all big Dolly Parton fans. Love Emmylou Harris.
For the first 13 years of my life, the only record I ever listened to was Dolly Parton's Greatest Hits.
There you go. Linda Ronstadt.
That was a
beautiful voice.
That was a bit. I'm doing a bit. That's not true. That. I can't lie to the people.
She has a beautiful voice.
So there you go.
In regards to the record, with some of your earlier releases, you released those on tape. Did you do that with Casual Music album as well?
Yeah. You can either download it online or you can buy a tape. Anything else, you got to do yourself. You can download it online and then burn it to a CD and then sell it to your friends. We actually encourage that. You know, please get out there any way you can.
Cheaper to buy the tapes and download yourselves than to buy
tapes
CDs
are cheaper than CDs.
Any plans on releasing it on vinyl? Because that's the hip.
I don't think we have.
Do you want to lend me some money? Because I mean,
I think, like, that's a really cool idea, and if we had the means to do that, and we knew that people would buy it, that'd be really cool, but...
Yeah, that's the thing. I have no confidence that if we did produce any number of those, that we'd be able to sell them. I don't know if I would buy it.
You definitely need a cool briefcase to sell them out of, though.
Yeah, well, I have a briefcase. Yeah.
The limited run.
Do you got that?
Yeah.
That's good. I have one, too, but it's too small.
I have a pretty big briefcase.
I mean, if we're still here in a few years, maybe we'll think about it.
Here, like in the band, or here, like alive?
No, here in this room.
In this room.
Oh.
Okay.
You guys are never leaving here.
Oh, yikes.
It's kind of warm. Well, since you're trapped here, can we hear another song?
Yeah, for sure. Let's do Young and Heart.
Young and Heart.
We put together a music video as well, which is currently in the editing phase for this song, Young at Heart, written by Sam in the early days of Wind Up Birds. All right, take it away, Sam.
All right. 1, 2, 3. Comes my whole world.
Oh, my baby's so good to me. Whoa, my baby's so good.
Speaking honestly, I never do what I should. Oh, but baby's so good to me.
Oh, my baby's so good to me. Oh, my baby's so good to me. Oh, my baby's so good to me. Whoa, 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 my baby's so good.
I've been hearing murmurings that you guys are working on a new record. Are you going through that process right now? What's the status?
Yeah, we did. We did a track that won't be on the album, again, for that compilation.
And we've started the 3-month research process that it takes to really get going.
We got a grant from SFU. We're doing some research about medieval Gregorian chant. It's going to heavily influence the rest of
our record. We've also booked a flight to Tibet, you know, just for some general enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was sort of planning phases, beginning stages of the second
record. We're probably going to do it with the same people in the same place with the same gear. I mean, that worked last time. We've talked about bringing some more people in. We've got some friends who are very talented musicians that we'd love to have on the record.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be really interesting to have some, like, horns. And, you know, really just sort of, like, we want to make it more of a
family album.
Yeah, you know, we have a musical family. There are pals.
Well, we've been playing recently with Sam Baglieri.
Yeah, we have
a saxophone player.
He plays with us live a lot, and so we'd like to get him on the record. And I mean, we'd like to have a wider sound. You know, we want some more things and stuff for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I could hear you guys throwing some synths on a few songs and stuff like that.
Yeah. We there's some synths on the new track that's coming out.
Nice.
Do you need more details
about that compilation album?
I don't know if we really know enough to say anything like with certainty.
Oh, fair enough.
Like,
talk to the local doorboy at your next.
Yeah, I think it's Kevu's project. So he'd be the one to talk to you about that.
Fair enough. So, as a young band, what are some of the challenges that you guys have to deal with?
I mean, things have been pretty smooth sailing.
Yeah, I think
for the most part,
pretty lucky. We met Maddie early on, and so we had
Maddie Cormier has been an immense help.
Really good contacts, James of House Shows too. Those guys have both been very lovely, very welcoming, helping us get shows, putting us on bills.
And I think that another thing that's really contributed to sort of our success in our own eyes is that we're all here to have a good time. It's not about making money or being famous. Because if it was about those things, we'd all be pretty disappointed. it's about having fun and making music that we like. And I think that we've done that. And so in my eyes, we've done a really good job.
And we've been successful in that we've been able to play shows and
we're not operating at a loss.
Yeah.
So that's something for sure.
This is the first band where I've been in where we've been able to make merch and
people come to our
show record and say, you know, I've got music online, you can listen to it. Before it was always, you know, oh, we've got some songs, you know, we're working on putting music online. It was always, you know, in progress. So it's nice to have a sort of a finished product that you've worked on that, you know, you can enjoy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, people go to our shows and buy our merch and they seem to be enjoying things and we're enjoying making the things for them to enjoy. So I'd say that's an all-around success. It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of want to touch on, you know, what you're saying about meeting up with Maddie from Trash City and James with House Shows. What's it been like, you know, playing with all those sorts of different bands and at venues like 333 and Matador and stuff like that?
It's really nice. There is a sense of community. I mean, I think there's some progress to be made, and it's by no means a perfect situation. I was really impressed to just, you know, discover that there were so many like-minded people, like-minded bands. We've been really lucky to play with lots of cool bands. We've played tons of shows with The Gins. We've played with Wax Cowboy, Atlee's band. We've played with Kai Bravewood. We've played with, you know, Peach Pit and Reno. You know, Future Star. Winona Forever. And it's nice to sort of run into kindred spirits, people who like the same music, people who like different music but still are interested in the same things. It's a real cool community that I think Maddie and James have had a big part in forming and supporting and you know, continuing. Because I think without them and without those shows, you'd have lots of great people doing stuff on their own. So it's nice that you've got these people. I mean, there's other bookers too. The Grotto does some great shows. Zoe and Alexi, right?
Yeah.
So I think we're lucky that in Vancouver, even though it's tough to put on shows, it's tough to be a band. There's people out there, you know, fighting the good fight, trying to bring everybody together and do the best they can.
The last 2 years of my life have been discovering all of these unmarked doors with venues behind them in various areas of Vancouver.
Unfortunately, there's some venues that have closed down.
Yeah, fingers crossed studios, rest in peace.
Redgate on Hastings.
Is Redgate gone?
I heard some. I hope they're not.
Oh, but I heard
they're still around. I think they're on some unsteady ground.
I'm not sure exactly what's happening there.
I know Vostok closed down.
Vostok closed
a few months ago.
Well, we're pretty out of the loop. But I hope
Redgate's still open.
Yeah, well, and you touched on something important that I feel that you'd probably be able to elaborate on. Based off of my observation, it seems that, like, you know, there's tons of talented bands in Vancouver, but there isn't enough connection between all of them. So do you feel that, like, you know, Trash City and House Shows have really helped to, like, at least create some ties that connect a bunch of different bands together?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, well, part of it is that I've been to more Trash City shows than any other kind of show. And the big observation I made pretty early on was that pretty much everybody can be there and everybody's like, everybody fits in at a Trash City show, and there's no particular, I don't know how to articulate this properly, but I think because of that, there's so many different genres of music that can thrive, and those connections are sort of coming together and being made. I mean, as we, Wind Up Birds has just sort of gotten on board with a couple other bands, like Wax Cowboy and
Club Sofa,
and a couple other bands, and we sort of put together an impromptu kind
collective.
Of collective slash kind of like a yeah we, sort of a group of bands that and we were working together to promote each other's our music and
yeah I mean it's more just like at this point nobody needs money from a label to make their music.
Yeah.
So the only thing that we're missing by not having a label is the mutual promotion that comes along with the label and the association through that label that connects bands and things like that. Because, I mean, as much as people go to shows and people love Trash City and the house shows that James puts on, they're not coming away from it with a sense of more than three bands that they may have seen for the first time last night. But so I guess what we're trying to do now is put something that's a little bit more on the internet. I guess a lot more on the internet.
The internet.
I mean, the other nice thing I think is that the sort of the core group is we're all friends. I mean, we go to each other's shows. Last Friday, Club Sofa and Kai Bravewood played with Solitaire at 333, and so you know Matt and I came out, and you know we're there to support our friends. It just sort of seemed to fit. It was like, hey, we all like each other's music. We all like going to each other's shows. We like each other's company. We might as well try to work together to support each other musically, you know, artistically.
Definitely. When you say a kind of collective thing, I know it's a little loose, but is there any plans potentially to maybe take on kind of a music collective sort of thing in a Broken Social Scene or Odd Future sort of way?
I mean, we're on each other's records a little bit.
Okay.
But I think we've got different enough styles that, I mean, we'd love to do a compilation tape at some point. We've also talked about a show with multiple artists. I mean, again, I mean, almost more for our enjoyment, just because, hey, it's fun to play with friends. It's fun to play with bands you like.
I mean, there's a little bit of that going on, I think. I mean, Tyler's on our record. Tyler's on the record.
He's also on Sam Bravewood. Plays with us. He's
Peyton's
in,
on the Dante's Spirit single.
There's some crossover.
There's everyone's
sure.
in each other's business.
It's like a whole cinematic universe.
Jess was
over
around when we did that single. Jess is on the track.
Jess did some snapping and some spoons.
Jess has been involved.
She kept
with
everybody.
And what band is Jess in?
Club Sofa.
Okay, she's a drummer.
Excellent. There's sort of like a mix of Riot Girl and jazz and pop. Very cool.
Yeah, I saw them
awesome
at
Kicking Ass
Music Waste. Actually, yeah. It was the Wynonna Forever show. I can't remember the name of the venue, but it was super
packed.
That's Toast Collective. I love that place.
Yeah,
I love any place named after cooked bread.
Absolutely packed. But Club Sofa, sweet. I got kind of this like Sleater Kinney, but jazz, mm-hmm. which was awesome.
Well, I mean, the three jazz. There's four of them. I think the four, three of the four are like jazz students at Capilano University.
So they're,
and so you put
more than qualified musicians.
Yes.
When I went to see them on Friday, I thought, oh man, like especially the guitar player Dom, very talented guitar player.
Rip.
I wish I could play that well.
Me too.
So, you guys have obviously, you know, it comes with playing all these different shows with all these different awesome bands. Anyone, like, specifically that you think we should bring on as guests?
Ooh.
Top Sofa.
Kai Bravewood.
Wax Cowboy.
Future Star.
We love Future Star. Lots of love for Selena.
Fuck it, Pavel, man.
Oh, yeah.
Get him in here.
Yeah.
Sort of,
I mean, we could go on forever. The Gins. Winona.
Oh, Winona, yeah.
Frog
yeah,
Pile.
Oh, yeah.
I think they have a record coming out soon.
Highland Highway?
Dante's Paradise.
Yeah, I want to bring on Highland Highway on after they come back from their tour.
There you go, they're in California.
Yeah, and they're going as far as Utah.
They're sweating.
These guys got to ask us about Jamon. Highland Highway. If we have time for a story, it's funny, actually not much of a story. But I went to high school with Houston, and he had a band in high school with a couple guys. But I remember, because he's a couple years older than me, and he was like the cool guy with the long hair. And I was like the weird kid with the
long
hair.
Every school's got one.
And he would hang out in the hallways in like this little bridge that connected the two main hallways of the school.
Classic hallway bridge.
And he would just play acoustic guitar. And like, I was just wondering, like, how does this guy get away with it? But then I was like, who would tell him to stop?
Yeah.
He's just in the hallways, like, completely improvising, just playing chords and like singing. And it was just, oh man, you walk past him and it's like, fuck, I'm living in that, what's that movie with the girl from Juno? The fuck, yeah.
Ellen Page?
What's that movie? The
Juno.
An Ellen Page movie?
The Freaks and Geeks? I don't know.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
Freaks
and Geeks. Ellen Page is near that. That's Lindsay
Cardelli. They're similar.
No, it's Seth Rogen, James Franco, and Freaks and Geeks.
Absolutely.
That's the...
They're
there
in
you
it.
Go. It's all interconnected.
Yes.
Houston Matt Samora. Good guy.
Good man.
All right.
Awesome. Cool.
Do you guys want to do one more tune?
Yeah, let's do one more tune for sure.
All right.
Okay, cool.
What's one of the other new ones? See one of the other new
Boogie
ones.
Down Chinatown.
Boogie Down Chinatown. Because then, you go listen to our radio thing. Go listen to our radio thing. You can hear a new song you never heard.
There you go.
Recorded at the end of the radio.
That's what we have.
Someone's using his
Gordon Bucket.
I've never heard Dork Days.
Okay, fine.
Boogie?
Boogie Down Chinatown.
This one's called Boogie Down in Chinatown?
Boogie Down to Chinatown.
Boogie Down to Chinatown.
We tried to work in some commentary on gentrification, but then...
This is a Pacific Sound Radio exclusive new track from Wind Up Roots.
Thanks for listening to our first episode. You can follow Wind Up Birds on Facebook and Instagram at wind_upbirds. Their latest release, Casual Music Album, is available on bandcamp.com.
A very special thanks to Unbiased Media Productions and Travis Dean for hosting us at his studio. We definitely could not have done this without him.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can follow us at Pacific Sound Radio on Facebook and on Instagram at Pacific Sound Radio.
For new episodes and additional content, Pacific Sound Radio is available on Bandcamp and on our website at pacificsoundradio.com.
I'm James Olson.
And I'm Jaden Fraze.
See you next time.